Thank you for joining me. I'm your host, Jason Coleman, and you are listening to Things That Make You Go, Book Review Podcast.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Things That Make You Go, Book Review Podcast. I am your one-man book club, Jason Coleman. Thank you so much for joining me. And let's go ahead and get to some books. Today we're going to be talking about A Guide to the Good Life, The Ancient Art of Stoic Joy by William B. Irvine. Now, I should probably tell you that I first became interested in Stoicism when I read Oliver Berkman's book. I think it was called Positive Thinking for People Who Hate Positive Thinking. And he was just going into a little bit of detail about the Greco-Roman philosophy of Stoicism. And I always thought that Stoics were just basically people who displayed very little to no emotion. So their philosophy was never all that appealing to me. It just seemed kind of boring and rigid. After reading about Stoicism and learning a little bit more about that, I came to the conclusion that our definition of what we think a Stoic is a complete misnomer from what the actual Stoics believed and tried to profess to the people. So in a nutshell, what Oliver Berkman was saying is that what the Stoics thought, one way that you can maybe, I don't know, get a little bit more enjoyment out of life is we preoccupy ourselves with a lot of time thinking about bad things that have happened to us, okay? And I think the key word in that phrase is to us, like people are kind of like lobbing a grenade, like a bad things grenade at us, and we happen to be the victims of this a lot, and it gets us angry and frustrated. And what the Stoics believed, or what Oliver Berkman talked about in his book originally, was that very often bad things aren't really happening to you. Bad things might be happening to you, but they're not bad in general. They're just bad because they're happening to you most of the time. So, for example, he gives an example of some loud people. I'm sure you've had this. You're out to dinner and you hear a loud group of people or being obnoxious, and your impulse is, you know, why are they being so obnoxious? But in reality, maybe they're being loud, maybe they're having a good time, but that doesn't necessarily make it bad. It just makes it bad because it's irritating you. I experienced this recently, actually. My wife and I were traveling in Canada. It was this girl who was on her cell phone. She was being really loud and talking about her dog. And I wanted to go and ask her if she could keep her volume down because she was distracting to the people who are on the train. But I decided not to do it. I mean, full disclosure, I always get a bit nervous when confronting younger people because I don't know how they're going to react. I find that they don't have complete control over their emotions a lot of the time. They don't take criticism very well. And so I usually try to avoid those situations if I can. So I didn't say anything. I just put my headphones on and cranked up the joy. Sometimes the path of least resistance is best. But I was thinking to myself the whole time, like, oh my God, why is she being so obnoxious? Why is she doing this? Why is she doing that? When in reality, she wasn't really doing anything bad. It was just bad because it was annoying me. So somebody might say, okay, well, what about death, for example? I mean, you can't say that, you know, getting a disease or having some horrible illness or having a stroke or whatever and then dying, you can't say that that's not bad. Well, I don't know. It depends. I mean, if you think about it, our world population, people can't live forever. People have to die. If everybody lived forever, then our planet would run out of resources almost instantly. So death itself is not a bad thing. As a matter of fact, you know, millions of people die every day, but I don't think you give them a second thought. As long as nobody you know is dying, then I don't know. I don't know too many people who really concern themselves too much with, you know, people who are dying all around the world from different causes. So again, it's not that death is bad. It's just bad if it's happening to you. So I guess this is when I first started to think like, whoa, maybe the Stoics are onto something here. Maybe I can have a more enjoyable relationship with my friends and family and my job and my students if I stop framing, you know, things that irritate me as being bad in general and more like it's bad because it's irritating me. I think this gives me a bit more control over what I let bother me and what I let not bother me, which maybe is what the Stoics were going for. Now, I should probably say that when talking about philosophy, I think in America, we have over-intellectualized philosophy in a lot of ways, and certainly in ways that I don't think that the Greeks or the Romans had in mind. For example, when I was in college, I took, you know, a few different philosophy courses, and the whole object was to be able to analyze a philosopher and, I guess, reparrot their arguments and maybe try to, you know, add a little bit of commentary. And that's how you would, quote unquote, do well in philosophy. But that's really not what the Greeks, certainly not what the Greeks and probably not what the Romans had in mind when they were creating schools of philosophy. I mean, according to the book, back in the, you know, the ancient Greco times, you could go to a school and people would apprentice you in various arts of philosophy. And there were lots of different competing schools who were competing for students, much like colleges do today. I mean, you would have the Stoics, you would have the Cynics, you would have the Skeptics, you would have the Epicureans, you would have the Hedonists. Okay. But they weren't trying to get you to become like this deep analytical thinker. I mean, they wanted you to learn philosophy so that you could improve your own life. Philosophy, in other words, had a very practical application to your day-to-day life. And what the author was saying was that in most societies at the time, they had a monarchy. There was a king or a queen. So the ability to be, you know, to have good rhetoric and good oratory skills and to be persuasive, it wouldn't have really been all that important, because really the most important thing was to just make sure that you curried good favor with the king. But in Greece, it would have been important for, because it was a democracy, being able to gain alliances and make political favors and get people to buy into what you were saying. All those tools could be helpful for you to advance your own career and to have a more enjoyable life. And so that's why wealthier families would be very interested in trying to get their kids into these philosophy schools. Now, I think Stoicism applies to me, why I wanted to learn a bit more about it, because I tend to be a bit negative about the things that I don't like about my life. You know, I wish I was taller, I wish I was stronger, I wish I had more money, I wish you know, I wish I was better at sports or whatever the case is. And honestly, I mean, even though I know that that's a bit of a waste of my time, I don't really know how to stop doing it. I mean, people have told me, well, just focus on the positive. Well, I mean, but that's easier said than done. I mean, my instincts aren't to be positive. My instincts are to be negative. And so, I mean, it takes a lot of training to get yourself to the point where you can begin to focus on the positive aspects of yourself, you know. And I think when people say just focus on the positive, it's just kind of more of a platitude. And I think a lot of times you just tune out, like, yeah, we've heard this before. But how do you go about doing it? And this is where Stoicism comes in. So, I mean, this is the main crux of Stoicism. So if you get nothing else out of this podcast, I hope you'll focus here. What the Stoics said is that what you need to do is you need to engage in a practice called negative visualization. And what negative visualization means is that not only do you focus on what's going well in your life, okay, but you actually will visualize what would happen if the things that you treasure the most were taken away from you, okay? So, for example, one time I can remember I was really angry and pissed off because I was driving I got a couple hours into this long road trip that I was taking, and I immediately got a flat tire. And so now I was going to have to replace the tire. I was going to probably have to, you know, shorten my vacation. I was going to have to go to a tire shop and get the tire replacement. And that was going to cost me, a good chunk of money. And these are all things I really didn't want to do. It wasn't on my schedule. And I was just feeling really angry and bad for myself. Now, this is what the Stoics would say. The Stoics would say, okay, now let's say for a moment that you were unable to afford to have an automobile. Or let's say that you couldn't afford to make the repairs on your automobile. Or let's say that you had some sort of lower back injury, which would not allow you to sit upright in a car and drive for several hours on end, okay? Once you begin to frame it and once you begin to think about those things, the whole idea of having to, you know, make a change of plans for a few hours while you call a tow truck and get another tire replaced, it really doesn't seem all that bad. So then somebody might argue and they might say, well, okay, but through this negative visualization, aren't you just focusing on the negative? And the Stoics were aware of this, and they certainly told people that they shouldn't spend their entire day in negative visualization, but maybe just, you know, maybe a few minutes every day thinking about these things. Now, me personally, I know that it might seem as if negatively visualizing things would make someone depressed, but I'm not sure that's the case. And here's the example that the author uses that I think hit a chord for me. Is what the author said was, imagine for a moment that you are with a lover or a spouse or just somebody you deeply care about, and you are saying goodbye to them for the last time for whatever reason. They're dying, they're going to fly around the country, and you may never see them again, you've decided to break up, whatever the case is. And you decide to give them one last kiss before they leave. What would that kiss be like? Would that be the most passionate, most intimate, most memorable kiss that you've ever had? Probably so. And so what the Stoics say is that when you visualize like this, when you snap back to reality again, it makes you much more aware and thankful for what you have. And it allows you to focus on the positive things in your life and not the negative things. See, even though people may think that the Stoics were attempting to remove all emotion, that's not what they were trying to do. They were trying to remove all negative emotions. And by removing the negative emotions, it allowed you to focus more on your positive emotions. I think the best example I could give, although I don't think it was intentional, I think this was actually supposed to be a bit of a Christian allegory, is in the Charles Dickens book, A Christmas Carol, where Charles Dickens, his main character, Ebenezer Scrooge, who's very greedy and angry and very closed in, he has this nightmare where he's visited by these three ghosts, and he's basically all his friends and his family, they all, you know, nobody wants to have anything to do with him. They all celebrate when he dies. He finds out that he's the cause of, you know, he could have stopped somebody else from dying, but he didn't do it because he was too stingy with his money. And I'm sure you've seen the stories about this before. It's, you know, a very, very popular story, especially around the holidays. Now, I think that when Charles Dickens wrote this, because Charles Dickens was a Christian, I think he meant it on a literal level where there actually were holy ghosts that were visiting Ebenezer Scrooge. But I think if you were to take the Stoic approach with this story, you would say that what if Ebenezer Scrooge was unconsciously engaging in some negative visualization? And after the negative visualization, when he came out of it and he saw how bad that his life could really be, okay, it immediately propelled him into changing. He became more generous. He gave his, you know, he's more fair to his workers. He started donating more of his money. And that is what the crux of Stoicism is all about. It's all about being able to understand that everything that you hold dear in your life, your friends, your family, your wealth, your possessions, they can all be taken away from you in a moment's notice. And not to sound too morbid, at some point, they all will be taken away from you at some point in your life, okay? We don't like to contemplate our own end. We don't like to contemplate our own death because it's depressing, quite frankly. But what the Stoics say is that it's not necessary to dwell on these things, but just be aware that this is going to happen. And so that allows you to live every day of your life knowing that you still have an opportunity to gain some enjoyment from your existence. And if you're not in chronic pain, which most people are not, if you are not homeless, and if you're listening to this podcast, you're probably not, you really need to evaluate what are these things that are making you angry in life? What are these things that have gotten you so upset? Because to the Stoics, if you're spending much more than, you know, a fraction of a second thinking about these things, that's moments that you're not focusing on the positive things of your life. And the only way that you can really get to the point where you're focusing on these positive things is to really have a serious visualization of what your life would be without those things. I think about that sometimes with my own personal job. I think to myself, you know, am I really happy? Am I putting my talents to my fullest use? Am I making enough money? So on and so forth. And then I thought to myself, you know, I remember when I was unemployed for quite a while. And I remember what my life was like. I remember I had to, you know, pinch every penny I made. I know I had to ask to borrow money from people. I had to rely on my wife to support me for a while. And it was pretty bad. It was pretty horrible. So yeah, I mean, granted, I think that I have some issues with my job, but it could be a whole heck of a lot worse. And when I visualize what my life is like without my job, I think it makes me a little bit more appreciative that I do have some employment that's able to sustain me. So I guess one of the last few points that I want to focus on in the podcast are the people who created, or I guess were most responsible for promoting Stoicism. And there were a few different people who were involved with this. I'm going to go over them very quickly. One of them is this man named Seneca, who was a Roman, and he was a very popular Roman. He was a very early venture capitalist. He was a playwright. He was an advisor to the emperor, and he was a big promoter of Stoic philosophy. And even though the Stoics say that, you know, you shouldn't become too attached to your material possessions, Seneca was actually fabulously wealthy in his time, you know, when he was alive in the Roman Empire. And so somebody might say, well, if the whole goal is not to become attached to things, then why did Seneca become so wealthy? And actually, Seneca talked about this, believe it or not. And what Seneca said is that you really shouldn't pursue wealth for the sake of wealth. He said that you should do the things that you find entertaining or fun or challenging. If wealth happens to come about this way, then that's great. Okay, maybe there are things that you can do with your wealth that'll give you more freedom and more time and more enjoyment. But just keep in mind, make sure you're negatively visualizing and understand that all of your wealth and all of your possessions are only temporary. Okay. And this, I think, is where the Stoics and the Buddhists kind of part ways. I mean, if you've been listening this far, you're probably beginning to draw a lot of similarities between the Buddhists and the Stoics. But the Buddhists, what they would say is that material possessions are actually what causes pain, suffering, and unhappiness. And they say that quite directly. Okay. There's not really a whole lot of inferencing going on there. But the Stoics actually don't say that. What they say is that it's not material possessions that are necessarily good or bad, and it's not whether seeking them is really good or bad. What the problem comes in is that when you begin to feel like you'll be able to hold on to these possessions for the entirety of your life, because once these possessions are taken away from you, you're going to be so devastated that it'll be impossible for you to attain any sort of enjoyment or happiness while you're going through a period of suffering. Now, somebody might say, okay, you know what? This sounds very much like a first world philosophy where, okay, if you have some wealth and you're doing pretty well and you're probably not facing too much hardship, then sure, I guess Stoicism can be great. But what about for the people who are poor? What about the people who are struggling? How could you mean to tell them that they should be happy for what they have and not complain so much? Okay. Now, before I answer this, I do want to say a couple things. One of the founders, or at least one of the most influential people of Stoicism, was a man named Epictetus. And Epictetus, in addition to being bullied quite frequently in his life, he was lame. He was only able to use one of his arms, and he was a slave, okay? And even he talked about, you know, how you have to use negative visualization in order to have a more enjoyable life outlook. Marcus Aurelius, who was the Roman emperor, was a Stoic. And he wrote quite extensively on Stoicism. And Marcus Aurelius's wife was probably unfaithful to him. He had 14 children, only about half of them even made it into adulthood. So he had an extremely difficult life, but he talked about the virtues of Stoicism constantly. Seneca, who was eventually put to death by, I want to say the Roman Emperor Nero, because Nero was like a, very much like a child, very angry, and he didn't like how Seneca was getting so much attention. So he ordered Seneca to be put to death. And when Seneca was being dragged away by the Roman soldiers, his wife started weeping like uncontrollably. And Seneca says, I can't say it as artfully as he did, but he basically said, you know, why are you crying for this one event when life itself is a whole tragedy? So I think, you know, it goes to show that just about anybody at any walk or any aspect of their life could use Stoicism to improve their outlook, to improve their happiness. I mean, for me, it was certainly a way that I think is going to enhance my understanding of what it means to be happy. And I think what it means to be happy is the fact that you're alive, the fact that you have opportunities, the fact that you're not homeless, the fact that you're not in pain. I think once these bases are covered, everything else that's, you know, that's good or bad that happens to you, I mostly think can be held in perspective. So that's about all for now. If you made it all the way to the end of this podcast, thank you again for making it to the end. I don't know what book I'm going to be reviewing next time, but I'll try to get a new podcast out to you as soon as possible. But if you're interested in learning more about Stoicism, I cannot recommend highly enough the book, The Guide to the Good Life, The Ancient Art of Stoic Joy by William B. Irvine. That's all for now. Thank you again for joining me, and have a great day. Happy reading.